This is an interview with Patty McGillicutt. December the 3rd, 1974, the material to be used for a biography of Arthur Evans. Patty, where did you first meet my father, and would you like to give me some of your recollections of him?
I met Art, I believe it was in 1932. And I was in and out of relief camps, as were most young Canadians at that time. And we got to know each other. I got to know Art very well in the course of many, many, many meetings which we held over the years, discussing plans for our strike activities in and around Vancouver and in the relief camps, mostly things that we did that were done in and around Vancouver.
You were in Vancouver when you came out in, I think it was April sometime of 35, and brought just about everybody out of the camp?
Yeah, Jack Polacek, who was killed in Spain, Jack and I were camp organizers in the Hope Princeton area.
That was a famous area, pretty tough boy. You came into Vancouver, can you tell me, were you in Hudson's Bay? Were you at the cenotaph? Could you tell me something about the Hudson's Bay episode? The papers stress it a little differently than the men who were there.
Very much so, indeed. In fact, as usual, the media at that time were, they didn't favor us in any way. And we weren't too popular with Mr. McGeer, or with his blue shirts, or police.
You told me, I know that the father used to call Jeremiah Jesus McGeer. Would you tell me the other name that you said he used once in a while?
Oh, there were several. One which I thought was very appropriate. He was referred to as Very McQueer. I think that describes Jerry very accurately. But my distinct recollection I have of Jerry was the day he read the riot act at the cenotaph, which would show his respect for it, I guess. I was as close to McGeer almost as I am to you, Gene, when he read the riot act. And we were entirely hemmed in that little square, or if you could call it, that little park area. I can see it just as plainly now as the day it happened. We had provincials, mounties, city police, and Jerry's private little army, the Blue Shirts, and of course our infamous Cossack, Scanlon, with his boys. And one of we had the opportunity of disbanding, getting out of there, or else. And we asked that we be permitted to march off in our various divisions. And McGeer suggested a committee to see him at City Hall, which was at that time the Holden Building. And I was one of that committee. And Jack Taylor, who was present at the meeting, asked McGeer, I don't recollect the exact words, but to the effect that we would not be harassed or intimidated in any way. Oh, yes, says McGeer. We got to the second floor and were hauled off the elevator and thrown in the hooska. So much for Jerry McGeer's word.
Yes.
Which endeared him to us very much, of course.
I think one of the slogans was work and wages, not Ocala's cages.
Right, right, right. Oh, there were many of those, yes.
And were you also in the museum?
No, I wasn't in the museum.
You weren't?
That wasn't my division.
Very good.
There were four divisions. We met I forget the address, on the old Wobbly Hall. The Wobblies were very cooperative, what was left of them. We used their hall, that was Division 2, Hope Princeton. And there was another division, number one, I think it was. Percy Hilton was in command, if you want to call it that. The Russian Hall on Pender East. Pender? Yes.
Ukrainian one, was
Ukrainian,
it, in those days?
ULFTA. And I don't recollect at the moment where the other two divisions met. They met in different halls.
I think the Orange Hall somebody was in upstairs,
right.
But I don't remember
right.
Which one.
Right, I don't right now either. I was division captain of number two division.
The decision was made after you were unable to get anywhere with Patella or McGeer, or there was nothing forthcoming from the federal government to go to Ottawa. Were you part and parcel of that decision to go on to Ottawa?
Yes, I was. Yes,
would you like to tell me something about it?
Oh my God, there's so many things we could tell about that. To begin with, it was very well organized. We had our divisions broken up, or I should say organized, into squads of 10. And the way in which it was organized, there was the group captain, and there was 1, 2, 3, 4 all along down the line. And we had it organized in this way that in the event, during our activities, if the captain, for instance, was put out of action or taken into custody, number two automatically, it's called, this was the way it worked, on the boxcars as we went through. There was a squad to a boxcar. And I put in some little time in the British Navy and with the old IRA, and we weren't half as well organized.
That seems to be that there was, obviously for many reasons, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you had this organization for discipline as well as to try and control the odd stool pigeon who
right,
was tucked into
right,
your,
right, right,
your ranks.
Right.
And as I understand it, there were a few that were known, but the decision was made by someone or by a group that far better to keep them and know who the devil they were.
Let them ride.
Than
let
to
ride.
Bring in strangers that it would take a little while longer to figure out. Plus, if you knew them, you made sure that they didn't cause any damage or destruction or discredit your name.
They were very well taken care of at all times.
Right.
At all times, believe me.
Is there any specific incidents on the way to Regina that you remember or you'd like to talk about? I know that Mrs. Sorley and your first stop made you all very welcome with her mutton stew.
Yeah, Golden, for example.
Golden, right.
Where we were.
She was the gray-haired lady that Ronnie didn't have her name, but I knew her very well as a youngster.
I didn't know the lady, but I could have a mental picture of her. And the discipline on that trek was really something.
And
really something.
You had no serious injuries or anyone hurt traveling?
The most serious injury we had was a guy got sunburned. You know, that sounds...
bad.
There was a squad to a car. To a boxcar.
How many men would that be?
10.
10 men?
And I think we jumped our squads up to 12, maybe more at that time.
As you kept a few more, you picked a few
right.
up in Calgary, I think, from Alberta.
Yes. Look, we sat on took our places on the boxcars, flat cars, coal cars, whatever the hell they happened to be, in order. And, The few known stools that we had, they were very carefully nursed. And the few we suspected, they didn't know it, but they were babysat all the time, all the way.
Very good. You did get to Regina and had an invitation from the federal government to send a delegation to Ottawa.
Right.
I guess we're all aware of what happened in Ottawa.
Very much so.
And
I wasn't on that delegation, by the way.
No. And then the delegation came back, and we come to an area that's a black page in Canada's history, and that's July the 1st.
Yeah.
Would you like to tell me where you were the evening of July the 1st?
I was right there,
At Market Square?
At Market Square, yes.
And what did you see?
Well, I think, if I remember correctly, there were two big furniture moving vans. Chrome truck, I believe it was. And one pulled up, I don't remember the name of the streets now. One pulled up to our right, so to speak, and one to our left. And at our front was the police and fire station. Quite a breeze blowing that day.
This was a meeting for the citizens of Regina,
right,
not
right,
for the Trekkers,
right.
And there was a small amount of you actually
two
there.
Two of us there, yeah. A few, I would say, maybe around 100, maybe give or take a few.
Do you remember the speakers on the platform at the time?
Yes, Art Evans, Red Walls, the delegation tomorrow.
Fine.
The delegation tomorrow. And while I didn't pay any attention to it at the time, I distinctly heard a whistle blown. At which time, the doors of the fire station opened, the city police came out. Mounties poured out of the both of these trucks and started to throw gas grenades. In fact, some of the boys grabbed some of those and threw them right back in the truck. And, of course,
there was no warning as to what was happening?
No warning, nothing.
And there was no disturbance to have caused
nothing
this?
Nothing at all. There was absolutely no reason for it.
It was a peaceful meeting, well under control.
It was a peaceful meeting. It was an attack, a deliberate planned attack on a peaceful meeting by principally the Mounties and the city police.
Do you remember after what their reason was for bringing on this attack?
I've heard many reasons. Not many. I've heard a few, but I can't think of any other than that it was orders from the Bennett government to break us up. How they did it didn't matter a damn as long as it was done. Well, as a matter of fact, they broke up that particular meeting, but they strengthened our organization.
And what happened to you on that particular evening?
Well, after we barricaded the street, It went through my mind right then. The city police walking towards us with their clubs up. That reminds me of the Keystone Cops. That's just what flashed through my mind. I remember we barricaded the streets, and there was about the length of a car open. It was the chap was an American. And I said, "Sorry, old boy, we've got to borrow your car." "What the hell do you want my car for?" "Well, look, there's just room for one. Yours just fits." "Sorry, old boy." "Oh, me goddamn," says he. He and his family got out of the car, and we told them, "Now, look, we're sorry about this, but it's quite possible we're going to be attacked from any and all directions." See these guys? Well, while all this was going happening, boys, young fellows, carriers on their bikes were coming up with chunks of wood, rocks, pieces of pavement, bottles. And be back in a minute, boys, and they'd dump it and take off. But when the cops got within range, we threw rocks. They opened fire. I can't recollect just how many were hit. Prange was hit. I think it was a ricochet that got him. I'm not sure. Then, of course, the Mounties rode in all directions. Now, that's wrong. Not in all directions. They came at us from three different directions, on horseback as well as on foot. And it was at this time I got bowled over, and a horse stepped on my knee. Then we decided, just about this time, word went round: break up into your squads and get back to the stadium the best way you can. And one incident I won't forget. This is for publicity, I guess, Gene. I won't use the name then. But there were two brothers with us who have since become doctors. They were on first statement. And one of the boys, Blondie, one of the brothers, was helping me. My knee was beginning to swell and bothering me. And I can't remember the name of the hotel. But the mountains were coming both ways. So now this is no place for us. So I said, fellas, let's get in this hotel. I think it was an Irishman owned it. You can't come in here. I'm sorry, old boy, we're here. Nothing will be damaged. We're not going to hurt anybody. We're not going to. We're just taking cover. But what? Why? I said, take a look out that door, but don't stay looking too long. And he looked both ways and all right. And there was a little guy. I've forgotten his name. He became rather famous afterwards. Very prim and proper English gentleman. And he proceeded to inform us that we were hooligans and hoodlums. Went to go out on the street, and I went over to him. I said, look, old-timer, if you go out there, you'll get battered over the head. I'm a loyal British subject. I just want you blasted hooligans. Okay, old-timer. The bounty sergeant was down, and whack, he laid the poor old guy out cold. Okay. So I reached out and skidded him. Grabbed him by a leg and pulled him in the door, and Blondie brought him to. When he come to, get them, kill them, kill every one of them, I say. I beg your pardon, sir. I thought you were a loyal British subject. Loyal British subject, be goddamned, man. Kill them, I say.
Good. And did you end up in the hospital that evening?
Yeah, I finished up in the hospital.
Tell me, was that the night that Father was arrested?
Yes.
Would you like to tell me something about your recollections of the kind of man my father was?
Well, to say he was a great guy is putting it mildly.
What his personality, though? Was he ball of fire? Was he tough? Wit? What were the kind of things that made him able to be a leader on the track?
Well, his qualifications were many. He had a very keen, live, active brain. All his efforts were dedicated towards the working class.
Was he able to elicit the support of the men? I know that many certainly weren't communists, and he had been branded as Red through the newspapers all over the country. Did that bother those who weren't really politically aware, that just wanted work and wages? Or was he able to have their confidence?
Yes, I would say so. There were some, of course, and this again was due to the Mountie rats who had been infiltrated into our ranks, and of course they never missed an opportunity to say that so and so communist, but it did not bother the vast majority of those who were not communists. Of course, I was a member of the Communist Party at the time myself. And Art Evans wasn't an easy man to work with.
I've heard that before.
He didn't. Anyone on his committees, there were no deadheads. You pulled your weight. Or you weren't on the committee, irrespective of whether you were a communist or not. You had a job to do, and it had to be done.
Well, I don't know him from that angle, but I do know that he was a hard-working man.
Well, none of us could keep up with him, physically. And sure as hell not mentally.
dear, what happened after you left the hospital in Regina, Patty?
I rejoined the group.
Did joined the group.
Yeah. I was supposed to stay in hospital longer than I did, but I couldn't see that as soon as I could get my leg under me. In fact, I wanted to be out right now. If it hadn't been for this first aid man of ours, I would have been. At that time, I was in charge of the, I'd been placed in charge of the first aid. And that first aid group, that was something else. We had, we had male nurses, qualified male nurses. I don't know how many. We had 9 of them on the committee, and there were 2 doctors.
Actually, professional
actually
doctors?
Actually, MDs,
that
yes.
were on the track?
Yes, yeah.
And unable to get jobs that they had?
They were like the rest of us.
Goodness, I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah.
That's very
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, there were 2 doctors. I could give you their names, but I'd rather not know.
I'll take their names off the tape. I'd like to locate them and get their permission to use their names.
I'd like to locate them. I've been trying to for years and can't. They could very well be dead and gone. I don't know.
Yeah.
One I believe was killed in World War II. But the 2 brothers in particular, they came back to Vancouver and you know, they weren't doctors at this time.
No.
They did become doctors after.
Oh, how interesting.
And we had the first aid group. It functioned very well. We had our own building, which of course had been designated as a first aid station in the fairgrounds. That'll be your husband, I guess.
Yeah.
Good enough cup of coffee. Let's have a cup for it.
Is there anything else that you would like to tell me, particularly of your association with Dad?
I don't think there's anything much.
Can you remember any of the names that he used for Bennett or some of the politicians or some of the police that he had not too much use for?
Oh, Lord. That's a long time ago, Gina. I
know it is. I'm stretching all of our memories. Patty, may I have permission to use the material on this tape from my father's biography?
By all means.
Thank you very much.